Hi, Fab.
Hey, Charles, what's going on?
Nothing much. Another thing to talk about in 2020.
I know, 2020, man. I feel like every day is something new and different. And not good news.
No, it has not been good news.
It's just bad news after bad news after bad news.
Looking forward to 2021. But I know that you are a fan of sports.
Yes, big, big, big fan.
And can we say that you are particularly a fan of basketball?
Yeah, I would say basketball is my favorite. I named my dog after LeBron James. My last dog was named Kobe. So I would, it's safe to say that basketball is my favorite sport.
So there are a lot of issues that are happening right now throughout the world, and particularly the conversation about racial injustice and racial oppression. And the NBA has really been at the forefront of this.
Yeah, you know, often in our group, you, me, Pat, we talk about sports all the time. And we often discuss the scores, who's the better athlete, like who's the better team, who's going to win, and so forth. But almost every single time, that conversation leads us to talk about athletes and their role in society, their contributions, how they show up, and how they really speak on issues other than the game.
And I think you and I both agree that we are really proud and applaud what so many athletes have been doing and really kind of using their platform to raise awareness in, I think, some really creative and brave ways.
Yes.
And we want to be able to talk about this today because while the attention nationally and also globally has been on the players, the owners, the leagues, I think there's another element to this that is not getting the attention that it deserves, but is a really critical piece in all of this. And so to our audience, as always, we encourage you to take this journey with us as we explore protest and sports.
This is In My Opinion. Course I see into the sometimes quirky and lively conversation between two friends from grad school. We talk about everything and nothing, blending social commentary with strong opinions. Often entertaining, sometimes serious, and all the way civil. You know, the way you wish the world would be.
So I think something that I hear quite often in this conversation of protest and sports is that there are people who are often kind of asking, you know, why is sports at the forefront of this? Like, why are athletes having conversations about these issues when they should just be focused on playing the game?
They should shut up and dribble.
Yeah, shut up and dribble. But there's a real history to this conversation. This isn't just a new thing that we're seeing today. And I think you've really brought up some great points that we should share with the audience about how far back history and protest, I'm sorry, how far back sports and protest really goes.
Yeah, you know, that's what I think is so interesting about this conversation. I feel like every decade or every generation with the new athlete that decides to protest, or maybe in not even every generation, every few years, really.
Yeah.
There's this really sentiment that this shouldn't happen, or this is feels new, or is outrageous. But this is something that has existed for such a long time. And in really looking up and doing a little bit of research on the history of protests and sports, I came across protests that happened as early as the 6th century.
Wow.
Like a really long time ago, before media, before TV.
That was definitely before media.
Before social media, for sure. Before radio, before any kind of technology that could influence sort of the motivation for protests, right? And back in the 6th century, the sports looked like chariot races.
Yeah.
And there were a couple other sports, but chariot races seemed to be really popular in the Roman Empire. And it was really political as well, because often chariot racers belonged to different groups or factions, and these factions may or may not support the emperor. And because of all the turmoil, two players from opposing factions got arrested and were sentenced to death. The chariot racers wanted to plead for the emperor for leniency, for mercy, to so that they could be spared, and the emperor declined. And in protest, the fans, the factions, and the chariot racers decided not to race and revolted. And it was violent revolt. They attempted to burn down the arena, burn down several infrastructure that were tied to the emperor.
Wow. That's pretty intense.
Right? And this led to almost 30,000 people dying in this battle before the protests came under control. So when we think about this idea of protests and sports and riots, this is something that stems so far back that it almost makes me think that maybe they are intrinsically connected.
I think that's a great point. And I certainly was unaware of just how far back the history of this really goes.
Right.
And, you know, it also brings to mind for me, you know, being a Black man here in America, of even the intersection between slavery and sports.
Right.
And particularly how oftentimes, you know, Black people, especially during the time of slavery, were really seen as entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that over time, sports has become somewhat of the evolution of that, of Black athletes serving as entertainment. And I think back to a very iconic moment in the 68 Olympics. People can connect to the visual of John Carlos and Tommy Smith, who famously, during their podium ceremony, are raising their fists with the black glove.
That is a super popular image, and I see it come around almost every year whenever we're talking about civil rights or any kind of civil issue.
But the irony in all of that is that there's this amazing story that I don't think many people know about. So in that picture, many people are familiar with John and Tommy. And there's also a third person there who often goes unnoticed.
I don't even know his name.
So his name is Peter Norman.
Okay.
And he was an Australian Olympian. And he is there on the podium. So he received a second
He's
place.
He's the third guy in the picture.
He's the third guy in the picture.
Yes.
And standing on the second podium, the second place podium, and has his head down in solidarity for what was happening with John and Tommy. The interesting part of this is that Peter actually played a pivotal part in what Tommy and John actually did.
That's really interesting, because I have to admit that when I see that picture, what I felt happened was that the two Black Olympians did an act of protest, and the third man did not.
What happened behind the scenes, and this didn't come out until many years later. So for one side, even Tommy himself, when he did an autobiography, because it was initially thought that they were representing Black Power and the Black Panther movement, later came out and said that it was really in solidarity for human rights.
Mm.
But what was also revealed was Peter Norman, who is again the third person in this image, and also in the picture is wearing an Olympic, what's called an Olympic Project for Human Rights badge. So he was actually
really
going out there showing support for human rights and was in total support of what John and Tommy were doing.
That's really amazing for that time period. He was definitely ahead of his time.
Totally. And really also putting his own profession at risk. And it was actually his idea for them to wear the black gloves, and was the one who gave them the gloves that they famously wore.
Wow.
And if you notice in the image that was taken, they're wearing gloves on the opposite hand because it was the same pair.
Wow, that is really amazing.
So usually they would raise a right fist, but
right,
because they had
they
right
just had a right
hand
and left.
That's how they made it work.
Wow,
yeah.
I did not know that. That's pretty interesting.
And the other part of this is that when Peter returned to Australia, he was actually ostracized for it. And after all of this happened, Peter did not receive a hero's welcome when he went back to Australia. And in fact, although he many times over actually continued to qualify to compete in the future Olympics, was not allowed to do so by the Olympic Association in Australia. And when asked about it, they said that, you know, it was for other reasons. But he really ended up dying years after and went completely unrecognized for any of the contributions that he made, and his profession was never the same after his show of support.
That is really great to know. And it shows just the price that both white and black athletes paid for protesting for something that they believed in that was not agree upon during their time.
And I think, you know, continuing this conversation, you know, when we talk about these things, the question becomes, you know, what role do we as fans play in either supporting the rights of athletes, and what role do we play in exacerbating these issues? So while we can point the finger at racist or disconnected team owners and executives, or overly racist systems in sports that have disproportionate black and minority players compared to white owners, we, the fans, the audience, are consumers and have a part to play in this narrative.
Yeah, you know what? And I don't think that that gets talked about often enough. And although I think the bigger issue here is systemic, right? And we talked about it in other episodes, but I think that your point is really well taken, Charles, in that fans usually are almost taken out of that equation, and they are the driving force of whether things are well received, whether things are accepted. And we definitely have a big role to play in how history views these events.
And I think we should really take a look at ourselves and be able to think about and identify what are these things that we as fans, and again, including ourselves in this, how do we contribute to creating the culture that exists? So I think we've come up with some interesting points, and we'd like to share them with you and be able to kind of get your thoughts on where you stand as a fan and if these things are part of your contribution.
Yeah, I think that there is definitely a fan culture, right? And when we think about competitions, when we talk about sports, people buttons get turned on, right? Mm-hmm. You get into competitive mode. As an athlete, that happens, but fans are not excluded from this. Fans can sometimes be more competitive.
So true.
Than the actual athletes that are playing the sport.
So I think one thing that we do as fans that contributes to this culture is the dehumanization of athletes. Mm. And what we mean by that is that we can oftentimes just see them as entertainment that's here to distract us from our own problems, not as people themselves who have their own lives and go through their own challenges and that, you know, have families. For us, they're oftentimes just a tradable commodity. You know, yeah. We have things like fantasy sports, or I grew up collecting trading cards as a kid.
Yes.
And I remember very clearly just like having the image of the player on one side, and you turn to the back and there's their stats. And based on that, you make a trade.
Right. Especially in cities that have big rivalries, you cannot mention certain names in certain cities, right? You can get like violence upon you or cursed at or whatever just because those names aren't welcome. We take sports so personally and so seriously that really the opposing teams become our enemy in some ways.
And even sometimes to the point where unfortunately someone gets injured on the opposing teams, sometimes people cheer.
Yeah, it happened last year during the finals when KD got taken out of the game because he got seriously injured, and everybody couldn't be happier, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And for a moment, it felt so ugly. People forgot that that was a person's career, livelihood, well-being down in that court.
Yeah, so I think that's a really important part for us to understand is, you know, how athletes... Now, even just how they're treated within the league themselves, and this has been a big issue, you know, I think the NBA has probably been one of the more progressive leagues in regards to giving players their own identity. But other leagues where, you know, athletes' personalities are really kind of hidden, I think it really kind of creates and continues to exacerbate this culture where we don't see them as actual people, just pieces.
Right. And because sometimes they're not seen as actual people, fans feel that they can say whatever they want to say to a player from the stands. And sometimes we have seen that get really out of hand.
Yes. Malice in the Palace.
Yeah. Yeah, an iconic moment. But we've seen it even more recently, right? When Westbrook went into the stands because he felt a fan, or he stated that a fan called him a racial slur, right? So we really have become so immersed and consumed by the entertainment part of sports that we lose our place sometimes.
So true. I think another thing that we do as fans is we reward performance over character.
Yes.
And in this example, things like forgiving players who have been convicted of things like domestic violence, infidelity, right? Or even just there have been players who've actually killed other people.
Yes. And still play.
And still play.
Yep.
And, you know, it's interesting how when you look at these things in relation to just outside society, when other people are involved in those types of situations, we're far more punitive. But when it comes to our guy, the person that's on our team, that if they're not there, it's very likely that our team is not going to win. We are more than willing oftentimes to overlook very serious offenses.
Yeah, and I think what you said is key, right? It really is a correlation between how good you are in your infraction.
Totally.
If you're not that great and you committed an infraction, you're done with. Yeah. You are going to get kicked out. You're going to get suspended. But if you have enough talents, enough skills, if you're the difference maker for that team, we become very forgiving all of a sudden.
And it's interesting because you can predict it.
Yeah.
There are just certain athletes and names out there that when something comes up, you just know
they're going to be okay.
They're going to figure out some way to spin this. Like, they should be suspended for the season, but it ends up coming down to like 2 games or a fine, right? Like a slap on the wrist. It's almost predictable at this point that you can connect talent to outcome.
And it's something that doesn't even start at the professional level,
no,
right? Like if you're a high school star, if you're a college star, you don't have to pass your classes. You don't have to do your work. You get so much special treatment. And I'm generalizing here, right? But so it probably is not like that across the board, but we have enough examples of that where it kind of happens so often that athletes can feel like they have special rules just for them.
And I think that's a really great point and takes us into another thing that we as fans do is we give players this larger-than-life persona.
Yes.
And we kind of see them as these brands or property that we as fans are entitled to them kind of doing whatever we want to.
Yeah, and I think the biggest example of that for me that comes up being just a big LeBron James fan was when LeBron James left Cleveland. Mm. And we can, you know, talk about how he did it and all of that. That probably contributed to the reaction. But we fans have done that with other athletes as well. And when LeBron left Cleveland, you would have thought he killed somebody. Mm. You know, he was dead to them.
Burning his jerseys.
Like, his name became almost like a slur in that city. But we've also done it with other athletes. When KD left OKC, when Dwayne Wade left Miami to go to the Bulls, when Ray Allen left Boston.
That was huge. Yeah.
And Ray Allen had given them a championship the year before he left Boston and completely was ostracized for it because it's this feeling like the players belong to the city and they have no right to make personal decisions for their career or their future.
I think that's a great point. And, you know, I think it makes me wonder, there are different reasons, you know, for this. And as we're kind of highlighting these things, you know, I think it's important for us to take a look at ourselves and say, am I hitting any of these points? But there's also another side to this in relation to, you know, how we as fans are actually relating and connecting culturally with athletes.
Yes. And I think that when you look at the NBA, the NBA is, I think, one of the most diverse leagues from in professional sports, right? But there's still about 70% of the players are African American or Black. And that is a little bit skewed from what the fan base is really composed of. As at best, depending on what city you're looking at, half of the fan base is white and the other half are Black, Latino, Asian, and so forth.
Interesting.
And at worst, about like 2/3 of the fan base are white in some cities. So it does explain why there might be a disconnect between the issues that the athletes feel are important and should be at the forefront, and how the fans really connect and relate to those issues, because that may not be their experience.
Yeah, I think that's really important to point out, you know, because what we don't want to just simply paint a picture that fans are just racist and that, right, or that they just, you know, hate athletes or see them as property. It may even just oftentimes be a matter of numbers, and people who just haven't shared those same experiences are unable to connect when something happens to someone who's from another race.
Right. So if an incident happens in an African American community, or there's an issue that's particularly important to an African American community, and I feel completely far removed from that, or I'm not even educated on what's going on, my response to that issue would be really different than someone that is well versed or that is a part of that community.
So I think that's a really good point to make. And so the question then becomes, what should we do to be part of the solution, right? So if these issues of dehumanizing athletes, or, you know, treating them as property, you know, rewarding them rather than, you know, holding them accountable, then what does the process look like for us to be able to turn this around? And I think it's important for us to admit that this is a really big issue.
Yes.
And it's not something that is going to be solved here in our podcast or in any other individual space. It's really going to take a collective effort.
Right. And I don't even think it's something that is going to be solved with a one-dimensional thing, right? Yeah. It's like, it's just so many different things that need to contribute and fuel what can really make the situation better, or improve the connection between athletes and fans, between the community and athletes, between athletes and the government, right? And what is really interesting about the protests is that people are so either in one bucket or the other. Some people are really reveling in what the athletes are doing, and others are really appalled. So much so that a city councilman from Arizona tweeted when the NBA stars first protested that they're whiny little insert curse word here, and that they get paid millions of dollars and should just not be whining about these kind of things. So it really does illustrate that has become a black and white issue for a lot of people, and it really isn't.
And I have to say, that train of thought, I hear it often about them being millionaires. Mm-hmm. I think that's such a lazy argument, as if to say that people who have acquired a certain amount of money, one, no longer experience racism, which is not the case, or two, are just completely disconnected from the issues that are going on in society. And I think part of it is we sometimes forget that these athletes were not always millionaires.
Right.
Right. Like, they grew up, and oftentimes in those environments that they were coming from, were direct recipients of racist actions or slurs that, even if it didn't necessarily happen directly to them, certainly happened to people that they knew or grew up with, other family members. So there is a connection to this that doesn't just go away because now you're making a certain amount of money.
Right. And we tend to love the underdog story, right? Like, ESPN has a whole program, 30 for 30, and they often highlight the athlete that came from nothing and worked his way into professional sports and is not a millionaire. We love those up-and-coming stories where someone came from being really, really poor, and now they're millionaires. But we forget that those experiences are who they are still. They have friends in those communities. They have families in those communities. And we separate the man from the athlete, and they're both the same person.
Totally. And so when we think about this issue of dehumanizing athletes, you know, I think one thing that we can consider when we're looking at these issues is, how can we do the opposite? How can we make athletes, or not make them, but how can we recognize and acknowledge them as people first?
Right. Because being an NBA player is a career. Yes. It's not an identity, yeah. right? So they are men first, they're women first. And I think that that's a really important point that fans don't often have at the forefront. Charles, you mentioned about fantasy sports. You mentioned about collecting, playing cards when you were a little kid. And we are obsessed with who breaks the next records, what the percentage field goals are, how many three-pointers, how many rebounds, how many blocks. All of these stats don't say much about the person. It just says more about the productivity of a person's career, right? Like black and white, that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah.
That's their productivity. But I think one way that fans can really connect with players and learn to see them as more than just an athlete is to learn about who they are as people, learn about where they come from, learn about what they care about, learn a lot about their values and belief systems, because all of those things are often more influential in their lives than their productivity as basketball stars.
I think that's a really great point to make. And even as we're talking about this, I'm thinking to myself, realistically, that takes effort.
Yes.
Right? Like, you know, sometimes you're coming home from a long day and you just want to sit down and you want to be entertained, right?
Absolutely.
Or you've got stuff going on.
Especially now, right?
Especially now more than ever. And, you know, so I think that idea of, you know, really taking the time to get to know someone, it's going to take effort for that to happen. It's not just going to fall into your lap.
Or interest.
Or interest.
Right.
And, you know, I think even with the idea of interest, though, sometimes interest comes about through the effort. Because even if you may not necessarily be in that mindset or in the moment, you might be surprised that as you kind of are just doing the work, that the interest can then follow after.
And maybe even that you may have more in common.
Yes.
With these sort of larger-than-life figures than you may think.
Yeah, I think really kind of getting to know players as people first is a really great step forward in changing the dynamic and the culture that exists right now and that players themselves are, I think, really trying to bring to the forefront. So another thing that we should also consider is there's kind of a dichotomy that exists where we don't celebrate people until way after the fact.
When they either died or when they had been retired for 20 years.
Right. There's that common saying, you know, giving people their flowers while they can smell them. Right?
Yes.
But when it comes to visionaries or trailblazers, people who have really sacrificed and put themselves on the line, they often go unnoticed and are, in fact, actually often ostracized in the moment.
In their own time.
In their own time by their own peers. But then decades and centuries later, we look back on with favor.
Right. And I think the biggest example that comes to mind for me is Muhammad Ali. We love Muhammad Ali. We tend to praise him for what he stood for. But I think while we're praising him now during modern times, we forget how much he was loathed in his own time for his act of protest. And I cannot think of a single athlete who, during their own time, has been really generally well-regarded for the act of protest and hasn't caused some division or chaos during their time. It usually happens much, much, much later. And that tends to be the irony of sports, right? That in the one hand, we can talk about Muhammad Ali, we can talk about Jackie Robinson, we can talk about all these trailblazers, right? That really stood for something, and 20 years later, 30 years later, do a documentary, praise them, and honor those attributes of courage that they have for doing that, while athletes are doing protests now, and we loathe them for it.
And when I think about this and kind of how we can actually put this into practice, you know, I often think about the conversations that we have had about sports and, you know, talking about players and legacy. Think about how even we kind of set these bars of greatest of all time.
Yes.
And oftentimes it's a conversation about championships or
what happens on the court.
What happens on the court, right? And oftentimes we don't consider, you know, who this person is as an individual and what contributions have they made to society and how have they used their talent and platform to actually move things forward beyond just the the sport that they play. And when I think about athletes like LeBron, who, you know, oftentimes is in the conversation of what, you know, one of the greatest athletes of all times, if not the greatest basketball player of all time, you know, we often talk about him being able to start a school, you know, his Promise Academy, you know, the work that he does off the court, and not just him, but so many other athletes. You know, when I think about remembering Kobe Bryant, what I appreciated about Kobe was not just his ferocity on the court, but the kind of father that he was, the kind of husband that he was, you know, how he helped to mentor so many other players, not just in his sport, but throughout the world.
And for so many athletes that are champions and that have accomplished a lot on their court, when they reflect back and they talk about their legacy, so much of what they appreciate about their legacy is what they were able to accomplish off the court.
Yeah.
Because in some ways that is either harder or more significant for them than their stats, their rings, and their championships.
Absolutely. And I think the more that we as fans appreciate those things and call them out in the moment and recognize them and praise them, not when they're dead, but while they're here, I think it's going to be a really important part of how we're able to change the narrative and the culture that exists right now. And that I think is a big part of the divide that's happening when players are trying to make a statement or express the frustrations that they feel or represent the frustrations of others. We should be behind them and support them because we care about the issues that are important to them.
And the bigger part for me is that because it's peaceful, we tend to complain when protests turn into riots, right? Mm-hmm. And not really acknowledging that there might have been a lot of peaceful protests that were not honored.
Yeah.
And then the only thing left was to take it up a notch, right? People feel so frustrated. So whenever I see someone participate in peaceful protests, they have my back. They have my support because I think that they're sacrificing so much and doing it at a cost. Being peaceful is not the easiest thing to do.
And I think even now we can take this moment to share our appreciation and thanks for the athletes out there who are taking this opportunity and this time to make their voices heard.
Yes.
And this is not an easy decision to do. And not just for NBA players, for WNBA players, soccer leagues, football, basketball, baseball, all sports, college, high school level. You know, there are athletes out there who are taking this opportunity to make their own stand and use their platform to make their voices heard.
Yes.
So we say thank you, and we appreciate that effort and for the example that you are setting for the generations to come. So what are your thoughts about this? And where do you stand as a fan or just an observer? You know, what are your thoughts about how these protests are happening through the lens of sports? Where do you see yourself, and what accountability do you take as we consider the role that we can play either in helping to create the change or furthering the divide that exists? So as always, we'd love to hear your thoughts, read your comments, visit us, post and subscribe. You can go to our webpage at imopodcast.com and our Instagram at inmyopinion_podcast. As always, this is our opinion.
We love to hear yours.